Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I'm kind of excited because we have a wonderful musician to talk to. This is because one of our favorite chamber music groups is coming back to Santa Barbara and will perform at the Santa Barbara Museum of Art at the Mary Craig Auditorium Monday, November 21st at 7:30 p.m. And this is the Parker Quartet. And I've got a member, actually one of the founding members of the Parker Quartet, to talk with us today is Ki Kim. And just a little bit of background. The Parker Quartet's based in Boston. Their honors include the Concert Arts Guild Competition, the Grand Prix and Mozart Prize at the Bordeaux International String Quartet Competition, the Chamber Music America's prestigious Cleveland Quartet Award, and then, of course, the Grammy, their Grammy winners, 2010 Best Chamber Group. And so, you know, a lot of kudos behind the group, of course. And I'm going to speak a little bit with Ki today. Ki is the cellist. And there's Ki. And then he's on the faculty at Harvard University's Department of Music. Like I said, he's a founding member of the Parker Quartet and the Blodgett Artist in Residence at Harvard since 2014. We mentioned that, you know, this was a 2010 Grammy Award for the Best Chamber Music Performance. And we're going to talk a little bit with Mr. Kim. I want to know, Keith, the cello that you play on is a fairly famous cello. What's that like? I mean, tell us a little bit about your baby.
Sure. I've been fortunate enough to play on this cello since 2004. And it's an old Italian cello, not the oldest out there, but it's a cello that was made by the Italian maker in Milan, Giacomo Rivolta, in, 1844. It's the last cello that he made, and it has sort of that sort of golden Italian sound. And it's a high maintenance instrument, but I've been blessed to play on it and to create beauty on it for some time now.
When you say high maintenance, what does that mean exactly?
Maybe because it's older, I feel like it takes more maintenance to maintain the integrity of the instrument. I feel that it's very fickle. If I haven't played on it in a while, then it won't just give me a beautiful sound. It makes me work for it again. It's very susceptible to climate changes in the temperature and in dryness in the atmosphere and humidity and stuff like that too. So
I see. And the bow you play with is also pretty exceptional, is it not?
Yes, it's made by a great, he lives in Boston now, but he's a French man named Benoit Roland. And back in 2005 or six or one of those years, the quartet, when Benoit moved to Boston, we were fortunate enough to meet with him and ask him to create a quartet of bows for all of us, for the four of us. And so we all own Benoit Roland bows, which we've been very, very fortunate to play on.
And I also want to mention that you have a new EMI release, I believe. And I was trying to pronounce the title, and I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the release. There's a big press release about the ECM new series. One of the members is saying this is by far the most personal recording we have made. And the history of this recording goes way back to your years as students in the conservatory, I understand. So it's this.
Yes.
Can you
yes.
Tell us a little bit about this recording.
Sure. So we paired Gyöngy Kurtág, a Hungarian composer who's still alive today, as well as a viola quintet with one of our mentors from our conservatory days, Kim Kashkashian, in Dvorak's viola quintet, Opus 97. And the connection there is really a very personal one. Kurtág has been sort of very present in our lives since at least 2005. I believe. When we entered the Bordeaux International String competition, his piece was one of the compulsory new pieces for that competition, and he composed the Six Moments Musicaux for that competition. And so we learned it then, but fortunately Kim Kashkashian, who I mentioned was one of our mentors at the conservatory, and who are violists in the quartet study with, she has a great working relationship with Kurtág and performed many, many of his works. And so we were playing for her and she's like, I know Kurtág, I can, you know, why don't we work on this piece together? And I remember it wasn't even published yet. We were working off handwritten manuscripts. And so we would play for Kim, and she would make all these notes and then send it via fax to Gyöngy Kurtág. And he would, you know, write over those notes with a red pen and send it back. It's like, I want it like this and I want that. And it really seemed like we were part of the creative process, which was really quite a heady experience. And so when we were given this opportunity to record for this label, ECM, immediately our thought went to recording Kurtág, music of Kurtág, and also as someone who was so instrumental in bringing this music and his language to life for us with Kim, and it just sort of was a natural evolution to record the Dvorak Viola Quintet with Kim. So again, there's not really a sort of thematic or even musical thread between Kurtág and Dvorak, but more of a personal one for us. And Kim also has a very close working relationship with the ECM label as well. So it's just sort of a whole holistic kind of experience for all of us.
How cool is that? That just the old days where you were faxing back and forth regards to, you know, you're faxing with the composer who's presumably in his native country, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing this, but I understand that the quartet has a deep commitment to to creative process, and I know.
Yes.
You guys work with a lot of composers of today, and you collaborate with a lot of ranges of artists, different types of artists, and then I also want you to just mention to our listeners the Beethoven project. That seems to me such an interesting project. Here again, it's a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 20th anniversary of your project.
Yes, 2022, I guess we're in. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary as a quartet. We formed in 2002. And so we wanted to mark this milestone by, one of the ways we wanted to mark this milestone was to perform a complete Beethoven cycle. Many of you know that Beethoven composed 16 string quartets that range sort of throughout his entire lifespan. And we categorize them as early, middle, and late period quartets. And really trace the evolution of his creative genius and his writing. And so we wanted to perform the entire cycle. We've had only done the half of the cycle before. But, you know, it's no longer, you know, such a feat of, you know, because everybody has done it. Of course, it's such a milestone to play the entire 16 quartets in, you know, one in a series of concerts. But we wanted to add even more significance, personal significance to it. And created it, and it's become a really sort of multifaceted project. In addition to the performance of the cycle, which we're doing twice in two different settings in March, other elements of it include what we're calling Beethoven Illuminated, which is a series, a video archive, which illuminates each Beethoven quartet. And they've already, the first two or three have already been released on YouTube, and you can check it out on our YouTube page. And it just talks about what makes each Beethoven quartet special, and all of us had a hand in writing the script for it, and we just talk about why we enjoy it, what makes it special for us as performers and stuff like that.
What is also interesting is that, you know, you mentioned that you're doing the complete cycle in two separate locations. What would those locations be? And then also, part of what fascinated me about the Beethoven project is that you're bringing mm-hmm. Beethoven's music to non-traditional places. And it mentions homeless mm-hmm. shelters and youth programs. And so I wonder, you know, where that first question, where are you doing the two complete cycles? And then mm-hmm. are you doing anything in regards to the Beethoven project in, you know, non-traditional locations?
Sure. So to answer your first question, we're performing it in two separate, not venues, but locations. The first at the beginning of March is at the University of Buffalo. And they have what they call the SLE series. And the SLE series has been presenting the complete Beethoven cycle every year for a long time. And sometimes they have one quartet doing the entire cycle. Sometimes they have two quartets doing half of it, or, you know, any sort of combination. But it's really a gift to that community to sort of be presented with this Beethoven cycle every year. And so
can you hold that thought 1 second? Richard's giving us a sign we got to go to a quick break. So that's in Buffalo, New York. How cool mm-hmm. is that? And then when we get back from the break, I want to know, you know, where else you bring Beethoven. I think that would be fascinating. Hey, Richard, there we go.
Okay. Yes, I'm here, Elizabeth. Go right ahead.
And did you by any chance get the music I sent?
I did. We'll be hearing that in just a couple of seconds.
So, dear listener, you're going to hear Key and his fellow quartetters from Parker Quartet play a little bit. I don't know what order this is going to be in because, we'll see. We'll see. Key will tell us when we get back from the break. Parker Quartet, and they were playing Georg Cortage at Six Moments Musicale. I was trying to get my head around that the whole performance last night. I was watching it on YouTube. It's fascinating. The music is incredibly dynamic and interesting, very untraditional mm-hmm. as far as I can tell, as far as a quartet experiences is concerned. I want to get back to that question, Key, about the way you bring Beethoven, for example. And we talked a little mm-hmm. bit about your anniversary, which is 20 years of being a quartet together. You decided, let's do all 16 Beethoven quartets. We're going to do all 16. We're going to play them in two separate locations, one of which is going to be the annual festival for this sort of thing, which happens in Buffalo. Where else mm-hmm. are you performing the 16?
So at the end of March, we will be playing the 16 Beethoven quartets at the University of South Carolina. We've had a visiting residency with them for the past 10 years. And as much to celebrate our connection with them, we'll be performing the Beethoven cycle in, I believe, 6 concerts. And what's really interesting about that is we'll be performing them at venues that were built around the time that Beethoven composed these quartets. So historical buildings in Columbia, South Carolina, that were built in the 1800s, early 1800s, stuff like that too. So there should be a lot of a sense of history that sort of permeates the entire performance.
How cool is that? That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. And so on traditional locations, I wanted to ask you about that, you know, homeless shelters and schools, et cetera.
Sure. Yeah. So because we're playing these Beethoven, this Beethoven cycle, not in our home community, we still wanted some sort of way to bring this music to our community where we live, which is in the Boston metro area. And so instead of trying to set up yet another performance of the entire cycle, we thought, why don't we actually bring this to people who would not normally be exposed to this kind of you know, quote, art music, highbrow art music. And so Jessica, our violist, has been very, very instrumental in making and forging these connections with community leaders and people who work at these institutions, such as youth centers and hospitals and homeless shelters and stuff like that too. And so that should be a very interesting experience. And we really truly believe that great music really needs no introduction and can communicate some sort of deeper emotional content. And so we're very excited as to the impact this will have on these people.
Definitely. Yeah. Have an impact for sure. And just another shout out, we just remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Ki Kim, one of the founding members of Grammy Award-winning Parker Quartet. And they will be coming to our Santa Barbara Museum of Art at the Mary Craig Auditorium on November 21st, the evening at 7:30. And you can get your tickets at tickets.sbma.net, or you can call the Santa Barbara Museum of Art as well. And I just want to also say that this is, you know, part of the the quartet, what they do is they do a lot of traveling, and I was just amazed to read all the places that they've performed. They're coming back to Santa Barbara for their fourth performance with us. It just shows you that we really have loved them over the years. And I was just an interesting thing about Parker Quartet. The name. Okay, the Parker Quartet. How did they get their name? Well, everybody that's been to Boston knows the Parker House. That's the Boston Historic Landmark. You'll know it because it has the name Parker House Boston Cream Pie, Parker House Rolls, etc. And so we have the Parker Quartet because Parker Quartet's home is in New England, in Boston. And they pay homage to the great history of artists and writers who use the Parker House as a meeting point. And that just shows you, you know, when I'm researching the quartet for this interview, they're not limiting themselves to other musicians as far as their artistic connections. Mm-hmm. They are reaching out into the artistic community in general. You were just hearing Mr. Kim tell us that they were doing part of their new series with video artists. So, I mean, this is really a collaborative, forward-thinking quartet, you know. Again, you know, the idea that they are bringing such musicians as Beethoven to areas that maybe you never have heard a quartet before. And then their new album just released, too. So a lot to talk about, but do join us at the concert Monday, November 21st at 7:30. And like I say, you can hear, well, I'll tell you what you're going to hear. If I'm correct, Ki, you're doing Caroline Shaw's Valencia, Ligeti's Quartet Number 2, and Beethoven's Quartet in E-flat Major, Opus 127.
Yep.
Okay. Well, we'll see you on November 21st. I know you're performing all throughout California this week, and so we'll see you Monday in Santa Barbara. Thank you so much
looking
for being with us.
Looking forward to
it, too.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Sure, thank you. Okay. Thanks, Ki. Bye.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Okay, Richard. So we're going to say goodbye to Mr. Key, but we're also, I want to do a quick shout out here. The Ojai Film Festival. Yes, I'll go to quick break after this. I just have the little PSA here, Richard. The Ojai Film Festival reached out to me and they want everybody to know they're doing a free screening this Saturday night. It's at Matilaha Auditorium in Ojai at 7 p.m. And it's a documentary that's made world headlines. It's called The Unredacted, formerly titled Jihab Rehab. It's premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, but it's only been shown at a couple other film festivals throughout the country because of its controversial nature. The film follows three men, each of who were detained for 15 years at the U.S. Naval Base at Guantanamo after their transfer to a rehabilitation faculty in Saudi Arabia. The filmmaker Meg Smaker spent over a decade living and working in the Middle East. 5 years in Yemen. She learned Arabic. She studied Islam. She taught firefighting. This film came out of her experience, and this documentary's won awards, the best short documentary at South by Southwest and in Student Academy Award. She's going to present the event this coming, tomorrow, Saturday at 7 p.m. In Ojai at the Matilaha Auditorium. It's free. And then she'll present to give a little talk about how she put the documentary together. And then we'll have the screening. But it's an important landmark because it's like I said, it's a controversial film. And Ojai's got the guts to do it. So I think that's a pretty amazing thing about our little film festival. So let's go to quick break, Richard. And then I want to introduce, when we get back from the break, I want to introduce a new director for Solstice, one of our favorite former directors is going to join us to talk a little bit about what the plans are for Solstice. We're going to talk to Penny Little and Claudia Bratton when we get back from the break. Penny's our new director. Claudia is a former director of Solstice, always my favorite holiday in Santa Barbara. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're discussing a beautiful concert that's going to take place at our Santa Barbara Museum of Art, which is November the 21st. And now we're going to switch gears entirely. Summer Solstice has a new executive director, Penny Little, and we're going to speak with Penny. And Penny said, look, I want to bring Claudia Bratton on as well. Claudia's a director when I moved to Santa Barbara of Solstice, and a committed artist in our community, et cetera. So Claudia is here as well. And I want to talk a little bit. First, I want to introduce Penny to everybody. She is an arts lover, supporter. She understands. She's a good communicator, et cetera. This is a executive director position, but she's been involved with Solstice for 15 years. I've seen her around. She wants to do all kinds of new things, but she's got some old projects to work on here, day-to-day operations, parade and festival logistics, fundraising, marketing, et cetera, et cetera. We already had, I think it was October 15th, we had a gathering also. So there's going to be a few other things happening like that. This is a unique thing. Solstice is so unique because it's a Santa Barbara thing. And it's, you know, it's our own thing. And it's just so unique. I was saying to Penny last night, I was bitten with the Solstice bug in 2008 when I was in the parade with Jay Paul. And guy in a wheelchair, and there comes my accountant in a little blue Speedo and nothing else. And I thought, when my accountant can show up in a blue Speedo, I'm in the right place. Penny holds a BA in film and music from Sagamon State University in Springfield, Illinois. She's produced and directed a lot of documentary films. She's toured as a professional singer and songwriter. She has extensive experience in event organizations. She's worked for Beautiful Dying Expo Advisory, Inspire Pop-Ups, Galen VP Receptions for Art, the Awaken Film Festival, Boston Media Summit, Santa Barbara Democracy Festival, et cetera, Peace Congress, et cetera. Lots of wonderful experience to bring to the position. Ricardo Morrison said, I'm sure she'll keep us inspired and engaged, which indeed she will. She succeeds Executive Director Robert Ellender, who assumed the role in 2016. And so I've introduced Penny Little, and Penny, gosh, we're excited to have you at the helm. Would you introduce your friend, Claudia?
Well, thank you so much. My friend and colleague, Claudia Bratton, I worked with her from 2006 until 2015, and I was her assistant. And so it's such an honor to have worked with her. And we are working together again because she's doing the Junior Artist Program, and we're planning a white party. We used to have this white ball. And so she can probably talk a little bit about the white ball, but that's coming up December 14th. And we're just kind of getting that off the ground right now because it's so important to get together with the community. And that's why I did the October 15th thing, you know, to keep bringing the community together and reminding us all about how important the arts and how important Solstice is, because it's part of the DNA of this community. I mean, it's like, it's one of the reasons why Santa Barbara is such a great place to be and to live. And so it is just my pleasure to have Claudia in on this call as well.
Hi, I have to tell you, that white party, I'm so excited that is going to be a thing again. I remember being at, I think it was 2008 or 9, I can't remember what year, but I was at the white party. And here, Claudia, you'll laugh about this. So I was looking back in the archives of, you know, my relationship with Solstice to kind of prepare for this talk. And you said, you emailed me a picture of me, I think. And I believe I was with your sister or something. We were we were at the white party, and you said, oh, Elizabeth, you were the belle of the ball. And you were referring to the fact that I went out thrift store hunting for the biggest, poofiest wedding gown, white wedding gown I could find. Huge. The skirt was, you know, 12 feet across. It was huge. I could hide somebody underneath there. And, you know, I wore that thing in a white wig, and I brought my best pal. I dressed him in all white as well. I brought my son and my future daughter-in-law. We were all dressed in white. Jay Paul met us. And it was a fantastic evening. And the history of that dress. So my best pal for 36 years or so is Native American. He's an artist. We met because he was an artist. And he said to me a couple of years later, do you have that gown? I said, yeah, I mean, it's in storage. My daughter's getting married. She's your size. And she loved the picture that Claudia took of us. She wants to wear that gown at her wedding. So I sent her, I mean, it cost me lots of money to send. The thing was so big, but I sent her the gown, and she was married in that same gown that made its appearance at the white ball. So I'm so excited the white ball is coming back. But that's such a cool thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. Anyway, Claudia, take it away. I'm going to grab a hot cup of coffee. Talk for a minute while I get a coffee.
Okay, well, we're really happy to have the white party come back, and it's going to be at Anchor Rose, which is at the Maritime Museum. It used to be called Endless Summer, and it's going to be a really lovely evening, and we'll have food and beverages, and we're going to have a wonderful silent auction like we've had in the past, and it's a lot of fun, and you can get great gifts, you know, kind of right at the right time. And One of the other things that I did this last year, and I'm going to even be doing larger this coming year, is the Junior Artist Program, because I feel it's so important to reach out to young people and get more young people involved. And so my daughter is teaching art at Bishop Diego High School, so I will have a nice in there. And we had about 10 kids that participated this last year, and I raised money, so I gave each one of them a check, varying in amounts according to their participation. But we also will have Carlos Cuellar, so that we can have a bunch of Latino students, and we will have, you know, bilingual people working with us. And it's great. They learn how to make masks. They learn how to sew. Okay. One year we had some girls, junior artists, that came in, and they lived in Carpinteria, and they were taught how to sew. It's great. Anyway, and building trades can actually be taught to building floats, you know? So it's a really fun, good thing, and I'm raising money for it. Anyway,
so if people, okay, so now we're going to talk turkey. So if people want to give money to that project, Claudia, how do they get in touch?
They should get in touch with solsticeparade.com, and they can, I think there's a donate button on the site that they can go ahead and donate, and they could put, you know, a little for Junior Artist Program.
Very good. Okay, Richard's giving us a sign. Got to go to quick break. Just reintroducing, you know, I'm talking with Penny Little. She's our new executive director for Solstice. And she is also kind enough to bring with her for our interview today, Claudia Bratton, who was her mentor for years. She was the assistant to Claudia, who was the director for many, many years of Solstice. And what a good time that was in my life too. And some of the things that, you know, we over the pandemic had to forego, you know, Solstice is, it's just such an important thing. It just was a big hole in that particular month. It was like, oh, so, but we're, you know, we will be doing some fun stuff, and the White Ball is coming back, and that's going to be in a great location, December 15th. The Young Artist Program is going to be huge, and you can donate. And we're not just talking people with paints. We're talking people that build things, that, you know, make the floats, for example. So you can be a young artist that who is a young budding carpenter or electrician, for example. You know, physics guy. I mean, I remember that one physics guy who built that one float one year. It was like, my God, you're an engineer, physician, you know, what do you want to say? A building engineer, but also he was defying physics in my mind. So, you know, you get some people like this that imagine a young person that is going to mentor under somebody like that. That's what Claudia is putting together now. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. Get back from the break and a few more. Let's tell a few stories, favorite stories about Solstice. I'd love to hear what you guys you have in your, in, because you've been around with Solstice for a long time. So the fun people, the fun floats, the fun parties, the interesting things, the near disasters, all these things I'd love to hear when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Back with Claudia and Penny. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. And just that, you know, you're hearing that wonderful string quartet music. That's that was our previous interview. This is the Parker Quartet is coming to the Santa Barbara Museum of Art. And that's a November 21st. It's their fourth appearance. They're so beloved here that they're coming back for their fourth appearance. And I'm talking with Summer Solstice new executive director, Penny Little, and her good friend and my friend too, Claudia Breton, who was with Solstice for years and years, and she's still involved. I understand she's putting together the White Ball again. A must-do event just to see the costumes that people come up with. And I asked both gals if they would tell me some of their favorite Solstice stories. So, Penny, how about you? Do you have a favorite?
I have a lot of favorites.
But, I bet.
I remember the actual first time I saw the parade after I'd worked with Solstice for maybe 4 years. And I was at the VIP area. And it was the first time I actually got to rest and actually watch the whole parade go by. And I sat down and there were tears of joy streaming down my face. I couldn't believe how amazing and how wonderful all this was. And I, you know, put this energy into this thing logistically and otherwise. And I was just so awed because we do this for people. We bring them so much joy, but my joy was overwhelming because I really hadn't had the opportunity to see the results of all the work that I had been involved in. The team of us, all of us people doing this here in Santa Barbara. I mean, it was amazing to me. And because I was always so busy, I didn't get to watch it. So, yeah, that's one of my, I think that's a highlight for me.
It's funny because if you're in the parade, you don't realize the depth of creativity that's, you know, because you're right in the parade. So you're not completely realizing, you know, how cool it is. So a couple of years, I just was on the sidelines, just watching, just so I could see, you know, the miles of creativity passing by. Oh, okay, Claudia, how about, you probably have a basket of stories.
Oh, I do, but I'll tell a funny one about Penny and I. Just like the week of Solstice, when it's just really intense and the phones are ringing and people are coming in and needing stuff, Penny came running into my office and she just started talking gibberish. You know, and so I just answered her in gibberish and we both started laughing hysterically because we both understood what the other one said. Anyway, we got it done.
Hey, yeah. Richard.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Have you ever been, you've seen Solstice, right?
I still remember my very first Solstice, and it was before we moved here. And I remember that it went on and on. And then all of a sudden, I saw this giant inflated ball that looked like the sun. And I'm going, what the heck? And then there were more people behind the ball.
Yeah, that was my Polly Exmano. Polly does that.
People get to, get to become part of the parade as the parade comes to an end.
Yep.
That was, it was one of, but my favorite, my absolute favorite float, if you will, was this pup tent. And there were people inside, but it was zipped up. Oh. And it would move down the street and it would stop and then it would shake. And then it would rise up and then move along.
I remember.
What the heck is that? And then it dawned on me. And actually, my wife told me, oh, they're telling ghost stories inside the tent. And I thought, that is some creativity in action. That was cool.
Oh, well, that's a PC way to say it, Richard, but there's probably other activities going on. But at any rate, I'll tell you my favorite costume. This was one year where everybody was incredibly creative and doing these incredibly overscale, wonderful things. And a young college guy, this was his first Solstice, he couldn't get his friends together, so he came by himself. He had a can of green theatrical paint, and he did his whole body, and he had his little green Speedos on. And then he thought, oh, wait a minute, I'm just a green person. So he stopped and cut down somebody's bush and got in the middle of the bush and wore the bush down State Street as a bush. And it was absolutely fantastic.
Now, before we go to break here, I don't know which one to toss this to, Claudia or Penny, but the rule is that there can be nothing, I guess, motorized. In other words, this is all, I guess, in the to coin a musical phrase, it's all acoustic, so to speak. So what are the rules? Not so much the prohibitions, but I mean, what are the rules in terms of your participation? Whether you have a float, you're dragging a wagon behind you, because there are no vehicles involved, no motorized vehicles.
Richard, let's go to quick break.
Okay.
Then I want to have enough time for Claudia to answer that. Yeah, let's go to quick break. We'll be right back with the new director for Solstice, Penny Little, and Claudia Breton, her good friend. Long years of involvement, both of these gals with Solstice. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm celebrating, well, obviously celebrating Solstice, but the new executive director, Penny Little, is here with her former mentor, Claudia Breton. And Richard had a question for Claudia. What are the rules? Richard knows that it's an analog. In other words, that there's no motorized vehicle, but what are
right.
the rules?
That's the main thing. There's no motorized vehicles, and there's also some height restrictions. But that's it. And then we do have, you know, some clothing required in certain areas. We'll just put it that way.
And no words.
Yeah, no words, no signs, no symbols. Yeah, that goes back to the very first parade when Michael Gonzalez went for a permit, and they thought it was during the Great Boycott, and they thought he was going to have a, you know, some sort of a boycott march. So the city said no signs, no symbols, no words. And of course he was a mime. Okay. Mimes don't need words, signs, or symbols.
Right. And so just to refresh our memory, how many people come? How long is the parade? How many people participate? You know, what are the rules for joining at the workshop?
All right, who wants to take this one? Well, you know, our average has been 90,000 to 100,000 people see the parade, and 60,000 people were coming to the 3-day festival. That was pre-COVID. And so now we're in a position of building back people coming back to events. But I heard all kinds of really high estimates about all the people on Santa Barbara Street. I heard everything, you know, up to 70,000. And so it was really a successful event for the community. And everyone was really hungry for this parade to be back. You could tell because there was such excitement about it.
And so if people want to volunteer and help at the workshop, how did they
okay.
do it?
What they can come in, okay, and we do remind them to wear clothing that can get paint on it. You'd be surprised. And we also have this closed toe shoe thing so that when people drop things, they don't hurt themselves. But you can volunteer, in which case we have you work for, you know, a certain time, and then you're free to then start creating whatever you want for the parade. We also, most people come in and pay a small fee to be in the workshop, and it helps cover the cost of the materials, the you know, the tools that we have to replace every year, the wood, the screws, the fabrics, the paints, etc. So it's great. And there's, you know, adults pay more than kids and all of that. So and then, you know, from that, there's usually around 1,000 people that end up being in the parade. Some people come the day of the parade and register then. We raise the price on registration a few days before the parade because it's easier for us if we know how many people are going to be there and what they're doing, so we can make it as cohesive as possible.
And how many people are paraders on average?
1,200. It depends on the year.
1,000.
At least. And the workshop will open again in 2023 in May and run all the way through the day of the parade. And so people can just go down to the workshop once it's open. Before that, they can go to our website, solsticeparade.com, and keep, you know, sign up for our newsletter, because that'll keep people apprised of what's actually going on in the community. And we're promoting all these different arts events in the community that we're involved in too. So there's all these kinds of happenings.
Like, fantastic. Well, thank you, Penny. Thank you, Claudia. Long live Solstice.
Thank you.
Bye.